Hey, Resilient Recruiters, my team and I are coming to Florida on October 9th and 10th for our annual live summit, and I'd love to meet you there. If you've ever imagined meeting me and my team in person, this is your chance. You'll discover advanced strategies and cutting-edge techniques to enhance your business, improve your results, and increase your income. This is unlike any other recruitment conference or seminar you've attended in the past. You'll gain exclusive insights from people who you just can't get access to anywhere else. Because they're not the professional trainers who do the circuit speaking at conferences or putting content out on YouTube. These are other business owners who are coming together to share what's working for them and exchange ideas with other successful people. For details and to register, visit recruitmentcoach.com/summit. Welcome to the Resilient Recruiter Podcast. I'm your host, Mark Whitby. And today I'm excited to introduce you to Julie McGrath. Julie is our client services director here at Recruitment Coach. As you probably know, we run a coaching program for recruitment business owners and their teams. As part of that program, Julie conducts monthly one-to-one strategy sessions with each of our members while I facilitate the weekly group calls. Julie is a highly experienced coach with 15 years experience in the recruitment industry, including 8 years as a solo recruiter specializing in tech and executive recruitment. Prior to her career in recruitment, Julie worked in large-scale operations and managed up to 200 people. In addition to helping our clients with business strategy and leadership development, Julie is also an NLP practitioner. This means she's able to help business owners break through mental barriers and adopt the mindset required to achieve the results they're truly capable of. If you're not already connected with Julie on LinkedIn, go look her up right now and invite her to connect. Julie, welcome. Thank you for being here.
Welcome, Mark. Thanks for that super impactful introduction.
I am so glad we're finally doing this. We've worked together for over a year now, and you've made such a huge impact on our business as well as our clients' businesses. And so I'm really excited to be doing this. So, Julie, I'd love to hear the story about how you got into recruiting in the first place.
Well, Mark, I actually started off my career as a graphic designer, and it really started from there. So I was I studied graphic design in university, and then I needed to find my first job as a graphic designer. But I was in that catch-22 situation where I couldn't find a job because I needed experience, and I didn't have the experience to get a job. So then I started getting an administration job within a advertising and graphic design agency. And from there, I quite quickly learned the ropes of a graphic designer and started to really get involved in client meetings, consultations, and being able to contribute to the graphic design team overall. And then I was quickly able to nudge my way into the design team, and I stayed there for just over 5 years, which was great. Throughout that time, I realized that I was better at the consulting, the concept idea generation, and then delegating the actual execution to the designers. I was then headhunted by an advertising agency, and I stayed there for just under a year. Unfortunately, the company closed down, which kind of left me at a crossroads. And I ended up joining a telecoms company at what should have been a part-time basis for just over 3 months, and actually stayed there for just over 6.5 years. But within the first few months, I was actually promoted quite quickly throughout the organization, and within 6 months I was managing a team of just over 15 people, and within 3 years I was managing a team of just over 250 people and managing 4 different verticals within that team, which again is recruitment, the technology side of the business, the operations and strategy. And the recruiting, the love of recruiting really came from understanding how people all connect together. And then I find myself being able to crack the code, and 1 year then started to lead to a next. And I always wanted to start my own business, but I quit my job with really not knowing what I wanted to do in regards to starting a business, but I just knew that I was going to start something that could make an impact and be significant in the marketplace. So I looked at my strengths and weaknesses, what I enjoyed, what I didn't enjoy, and I really enjoyed the recruiting side of things, the strategy, putting teams together, and I was really good at it as well. So then from there, I thought that I could do this on an independent basis, and I set up a recruiting industry specializing in tech and executive recruiting, where I could bring my love for technology and recruitment together and have those daily conversations that kind of scratch the itch of both sides of my skill set.
Wow. So you had no agency experience before you set up your own business? Obviously, you had internal recruiting experience.
Internal recruiting experience. And I did work with an agency for about a week after I quit my job when I decided that I did want to go into tech and executive recruiting. I got a job as a recruitment consultant just to see if what I knew was exactly or was very similar to what I could actually implement as an agency owner. And I said I would give myself a couple of months to learn the ropes and understand what had gone on within the agency world. But after about a week, I quickly realized that the similar principles, concepts and theories was already similar to what I knew. So there was no point in delaying the actual process of getting started. So I give myself a bit of a runway. I had 6 months of bills and savings in the bank. I had five grand of cash to start the business, and there was no plan B. So I hadn't got a job to fall back on. I left that agency after the first week, and I was kind of all in. The chips were in. So I started off finding the territory, which was based in the Midlands, which seemed to be an up-and-coming territory and geographical location at that particular time, just whenever we're talking about the market mapping and something that we talk a lot about within our members. I knew that Birmingham, Manchester, the Midlands area was an area of opportunity and investment at that particular time. London was kind of saturated, and some of the other bigger cities was already covered by the big agencies. So I thought, I'll take the Midlands and of England as one of the core areas to start getting some traction. I'd already got some partnerships in the Midlands as well, so that was kind of low-hanging fruit with the previous role that I had been in. So I got a lot of good referrals to start me off. And then within the first 3 months, I had billed over £10,000 of fees on one small job and a medium-sized job. Now, given the fact that the fees in the UK at that time are a lot lower than what they are now or in the US, I thought, okay, if I can make this amount of money in the first couple of months starting off, then I'll keep going for this over the next 6-12 months and see what we can actually do. So from there, I started to get a lot of tractions, more repeat business from the same clients. And they really didn't know any different from my experience, because I was delivering on behalf of the brief. But what I found myself doing was working longer hours, weekends, 24/7, weeks after weeks, working on different project briefs, to ensure that I got those first initial couple of key clients in place. But there was a cost of everything else that kind of set in the personal and family life when you're kind of doing that. And in reflection, while starting a business is hard, there is a lot other better ways of setting a business up and running it successfully in those first early couple of months.
Wow, good insight. Like reflecting back then, it sounds like you just gave this everything you had and were so hungry to make it successful, but obviously there was a cost. And looking back, what, if anything, would you do differently in that first year or so, Julie?
So reflecting back now, I was always staying closest to the money whenever it came to business development, delivering on client projects. But I wasn't building any systems or processes during those first couple of months or even years in the business. And while I was building the client base over time, I was still doing every part of the business myself. And there is a certain time that you get in the business where you reach capacity and a certain ceiling, and that ceiling is then attributed to revenue. And knowing what I know now, if I had to go back and change anything, it would definitely be working on kind of the strengths and weaknesses that I have, looking at kind of the Pareto principle that we look at whenever we're actually building out teams of people as recruiters as well, and thinking, how can I maximize the time of the skills where I'm really good at, whether that be business development, sales, and delivery, and then looking at how can I plug in against my skill set of operations, standard operating procedures, and maybe even marketing content creation, where you are bringing in specialist skills to complement yours, whether that's in a virtual assistant capacity or in a freelance or part-time capacity as well. So a lot of lessons learned along the way, but in hindsight, it's a wonderful thing.
Exactly. Absolutely. What you experienced is so common. What we see with our clients when we start working with them is that typically business owners are trying to do everything themselves. And even if they do have a team, they are still doing, you know, too much themselves rather than delegating and really taking advantage of people's talents and different skill sets within the business. And as you say, then there's a capacity issue, right? There's a ceiling on how much revenue you can generate because you're limited to how much time and energy you can devote to the business, which obviously has a limit. So I think that was a key lesson. So were there any other, you ran that business, I think, for about 8 years, was it?
Over the duration of the 8 years as well, I was dealing with highly successful people, highly skilled engineers and technical specialists. But at the same time, what I noticed within the area and the community that I was working with was that there was a skills gap further on down the pipeline whenever it came to our schools, our colleges, and our universities. So within the actual recruiting side of my work and building the business, I also then started to get interested in providing young people with the digital skills that they needed for the world of work. And we all think that young people are great on computers. They spend all day online. They're never off their phones. But if you actually ask them to create a Word document or a PDF or present themselves forward for an interview or do a video interview, the majority of people that I had seen at that particular time were struggling to articulate their skill set or even switch on Microsoft Word or some of them very basic things that we may take for granted. So I then made it my mission to try and take what I learned from these successful businesses and some of my clients, get them to reinvest a certain amount of capital in running digital skills programs for young people that were maybe furthest from the job market or had certain barriers to entry into the world of work, and to really start to encourage the skills and development further on down the pipeline and start to really focus on supporting the employability side of things and the upskilling of young people before it almost became too late. So then that started to gain traction within the business as a social impact project. And over time, that actually started to gain quite a bit of momentum when the business was kind of at its peak as well. So I found myself being torn between the highly skilled, highly technical, highly successful, to then those that were just starting off their journey, struggling to switch on a computer, struggling to present themselves forward. And what I needed to do was take the learnings from the one side of the conversation that I was having on a daily basis and being able to dilute it and work with another team of coaches and people that wanted to make a social impact and to be able to have something that was repeatable and free and accessible for the young people to start their careers.
Wow, that is incredible. That I knew a little bit of that story, but not the whole sort of genesis of it. And so how did that develop? And so you're running your recruiting business, and at the same time, you've got kind of another social impact project, which you're passionate about, and you're doing both those things at the same time. How did that other piece of what you were providing develop, and what happened with that?
So from a marketing perspective, you can see the problem that the business would have in regards to how do you promote the services of getting online, writing CVs, interview skills, basic skills that you need from the world of work, to those then that are highly skilled, highly capable at the top of their career, and then looking to change careers or go out into their own kind of world of work, whether that business, contracting or otherwise. So I had to create an option for an alternative method. But just before I was about to look at setting up kind of a digital skills agency for young people, I was actually approached by Google at the time to take some of the work that we were doing with the young people and entrepreneurs and people that wanted to start their own business, and to support a project that they were going to be running for just over 2 years in Ireland and further afield. And that was in the November 2019. So we got the project with Google off the ground in Belfast, and things were going great. I was brought in to help the SMEs grow and scale their businesses throughout the UK and Europe, and also then to create a strategic framework for their recruitment plans, and also then help people transition into different careers that were maybe mid-career or towards the end of their career. Unfortunately, March 2020 happened, and then everything closed down. So then the project, we couldn't bring people into the Google Digital Garage. We weren't able to run any events. We weren't able to meet any people in person. So we then were in the dilemma of the phone going off the hook, because the charities and community interest companies needed support for remote working. And then on the side of opportunity, the tech boom was happening and there was a demand for highly technical people. So I was caught in this dilemma of, do I go one way and focus on the money and capitalize on riding the wave of technical skills and high demand, or do I try and support the other people over here that generally need the help and support of staying in a job, putting a roof over their head, and being able to still work while we were going through this transition period. So thankfully, Google then took some of the investment that was supposed to be for the Google Digital Garage and offered it to me and a business partner at the time to continue the work that we were doing, but only in a remote capacity for SMEs, charities, community interest companies, so that they could stay alive during the pandemic rather than having to shut all of the services down for those most in need. So that turned into a coaching support and digital skills program, because at that time, a lot of people didn't have Zoom meetings. We weren't working online. We didn't really have remote teams. And that was where the majority of my time was then redirected, was trying to support people staying in work, keeping businesses afloat, making sure that they had the technical expertise to be able to run remote work in, to be able to still recruit for their teams and capitalize off the back of some of the opportunities that actually led during that time. And that continued on for about just over 3 years. And I still continue to work with different projects today, as you know, but it is significantly slowed down compared to where it was back then, just to different choices I've made along the way in order to bring us where we are today.
Amazing. Julie, I'm not grasping, why were Google involved? Like, what was their interest in supporting these initiatives?
So it's the philanthropy arm of their business, where they obviously make a lot of money from advertising and paid ads and everything else. And what they do is they invest a certain amount of their profits back into building small SMEs up to a certain point, where hopefully then they'll start to reinvest their capital and investment back into Google products and services. So it's like a social impact part of their main business and focus on what they do. And that's really where they wanted to invest geographically in Ireland, in the north of Ireland, to ensure that people were getting the support if they wanted to start a business, if they wanted to grow and scale a business, and also if they wanted to change career, if they were mid or late career as well.
Oh, right. Okay, that makes sense. So you're involved in this really interesting project with Google, and you had that going on. At the same time, were you still running your recruiting firm, and how, what direction did that take?
It kind of took a backseat during the main 12, 18 months of the pandemic. And then I was presented with an opportunity from an engineering company that I had worked with in the past to help them build a team of engineers, because they had been approached about a potential buyout. So the option that I was presented with at the time was to build and quadruple the team of engineers and technical support people, create a strategic plan over just over 18 months, and to put the organizational chart in place and to continue recruiting, managing and supporting the team to a certain size, so that the investors would then be able to take that model of business and kind of integrate it in their own. So I worked on that as a RPO model for just over 18 months. And that was really successful from a revenue perspective, because I also got shares within the business. And then once it was bought out, it kind of gave me the option of being able to then take a step back and think about what is the next right step in the journey that I'm now on, because it started off as a recruiting journey as an agency. It then developed into coaching, development, digital skills. It then moved to helping people get jobs and those furthest from the job market. And then it kind of went full circle back into technical and engineering support. So at that time, I was really looking for what the right next move was, and wasn't sure what that actually was whenever I was taking some time to reflect. I had earned enough money off the back of the project that I had working with in the engineering team that afforded me the luxury of being able to buy a house, cars, all the material possessions that I have today, and all the material possessions that you kind of need, and the luxury of being able to travel. But I had kind of got to a stage in my career where I knew that I wanted to be surrounded by a certain type of people, to be able to make an impact in the work, to be able to share the experiences that I did have, and to be able to work with people and a team of people that were sharing the same type of vision, values, and mission that I was on, that could not only work together as a team, but also make an impact both towards time freedom, but also money freedom as well.
Absolutely. And that's when we cross paths. And we are so lucky that, you were at that stage in your career where you were looking for something else, and this lined up perfectly for us. So I'm so grateful and fortunate that that happened that way. Did you know that many of our listeners first heard of the Resilient Recruiter from a friend or colleague? Word of mouth really is the best form of advertising. So if you enjoy the show and get value from it, I'd be grateful if you would pay it forward by sharing it with others. Have a think for a moment. Who in your network might benefit from this podcast? Maybe a current or former colleague or a fellow member of a recruiting association? It would mean the world to me if you would drop them a quick email, text, or LinkedIn message with a link to the show. Thank you so much for your support. Now let's get back to the interview. Julie, before we go on to talk about coaching business owners and developments in AI, I'd love to learn more about this RPO deal that you put together with the company where you quadrupled their team size and recruited those engineers within 18 months, which led to the successful exit. Could you, because that's fascinating, I think, for our listeners who run recruiting firms. I have heard of it happening before, but it's probably unusual to actually get shares in the company that you're recruiting for. Could you explain a little bit more about how that all kind of came about and what you did and then what the outcome was?
Initially, the business owner came with a proposal to say that this was the proposal that they had got from the company that was looking to buy their... It was essentially the software that they had built that allowed technical support and hardware to be fixed and developed and resent back to the end customer, which was just it was a B2C model. And then the unfortunate thing at the time was they couldn't afford to hire a team manager to be able to pay the fees of recruitment on all 25 of the engineers that were then hired at that time. And we struck up a deal that they would spend up to £10,000 per month against the hires that were made. And then at the end of the 18 months, they would pay the difference, plus then the additional shares that were going against the team if I was able to deliver in the space of time that they needed to in order to present the company for sale. So during that time, it was the hiring, the management, and the strategic planning of the workforce and management and performance reviews that I said that I would take responsibility of in order to get to the end goal within that period of time.
So in other words, they're saying, Julie, we need to hire 25 engineers. We can't afford to pay agency fees for those 25 hires. We're going to give you $10,000 a month towards those fees, which once we sell the business, you'll get the remainder. And also, we're going to give you shares in the business so that you participate in that exit as well.
Yeah, it's like betting on a horse. Sometimes these opportunities only come around once in a lifetime. And at that stage, I knew that I could do it and I was betting on myself to do it. I knew that it would be intense, but at the same time, I had done it before on a smaller scale, but just working on other projects at the same time. But I knew that it would be fun to do it. It was going to be a bit of a challenge, and it worked out well. And, you know, I'm thankful that that opportunity crossed paths, because it allowed me to build up really good relationships, but also then it afforded me the choice of being able to take a little bit of a breather understand what the right next move was, and then think about what do I actually want to do moving forward in the next chapter of my career and my life.
Fantastic. All right. That's a cool story. So moving forward, then we started working together, and I think at this stage, you must have coached over 100 recruitment business owners, and you work very closely with our members, more so than I do even. So you know them really, really well. And that, I guess, puts you in a position where you're, like, we work with some of the top performing recruiters in the industry. So you're able to see their habits, the, you know, best practices, the principles that contribute to them running highly successful recruitment businesses. What would you say are the most common challenges that you've observed working with owners of, you know, either solo recruiters or owners of small, you know, growing recruitment agencies?
I'm very fortunate to be in this position where I kind of get a peek behind the curtain of the top performing recruiters, and then also those that are maybe new to the industry that are just starting off and trying to find their feet, like we all did at one point or another in our career. Some of the challenges that people start off having is consistency. Is probably one of the biggest things, because consistency is really the foundation to success in both business and personal growth itself. And it's kind of one of those secret weapons that sits in the background that allows people to achieve extraordinary things if done and integrated into their daily, weekly, and monthly habits. What we see is some business owners have great intentions to implement and to execute and to want to do it, and will maybe do it for sporadic periods of time. And then there's those that build it into their daily routines, that no matter how busy that they are or what life throws at them, that they continue with the consistency of working on the business and in the business at the same time. Mm-hmm. And that is one of many different characteristic traits and habits and an overview of what I see on a daily basis.
Oh, can I just comment on that before we go further? So, what you've shared is both the challenge, which is achieving consistency, and that's consistency in terms of revenue, but then obviously what goes into generating the revenue is that consistent activity and implementation. And then at the same time, you highlighted what the top performers manage to do, which is to implement and take action consistently, which is absolutely one of the traits of the people who have done the best in our program, who've had the greatest results and the highest ROI, is they have been successful at getting themselves to take action and implementing. And of course, having the accountability with you definitely, you know, significantly contributes to that. You mentioned something, which is you need to be able to work on the business and in the business at the same time. And I think this is such a critical point, and it's difficult for a lot of people because people are on that hamster wheel, right? Working in the business where you're doing the things that you have to do every day to, you know, service your clients, manage your candidates, you know, deliver on the jobs you've got, find new work, et cetera. So it's that ongoing hamster wheel. But in order to ever get off the hamster wheel, you do need to also have that time to work on the business, look at new tools and technology, for example, look at how you can leverage AI, look at how you could potentially hire a virtual assistant, what automation tools are available. You know, all these things are, you know, in addition to the things you're already doing to generate placements and revenue. So I thought that was a really key point. What do you think is the difference or the secret between the people who manage to do both of those at the same time versus the people who, as you say, they have the best intentions, but it's very sporadic. Like they'll have a spurt where they're working on a new strategy or implementing a new project. But then, you know, they get sucked back into just the daily grind, which then keeps them stuck in that hamster wheel.
One of, again, the key principles and characteristics, and it's something that we all talk about, but a lot of people maybe set it to the background, and that's goal setting. And really understanding what it is that you're trying to achieve, when are you trying to achieve it by, and being able to break it down into actionable steps. And probably the SMART acronym is the easiest formula to follow. So S is the specific. What is it that you actually want to achieve within the business? M is how we're going to measure it. A is what actions then that you're going to take in order to make it happen. R stands for realistic, and is it achievable within that time frame? And then timely is the time frame that you're going to break it down on. And what I find working with the top performers and those that are consistently moving forward and consistently achieving is they have their goals in place, and they have a breakdown of their quarterly, bi-quarterly, monthly, yearly, and then long-term goals of hitting their milestones. And even if something does railroad them or take them off track or life happens, they're always able to go back, readjust, break their goals down, and being able to hold themselves accountable for achieving those goals along the way. And accountability is so key whenever it comes to building a business, because many recruitment business owners, like I said earlier on, necessarily don't start off in wanting to build a recruitment business. Many develop an opportunity to be able to get into it. So understanding that there's more to running a recruitment business than just making placements, and being able to actually build a business rather than just a job for yourself, is so important. And the people that are doing really well understand the difference between being a really great biller and delivering results versus building a business that other people can work on and within, even whenever you're not there. So that is kind of one of the key differences as well.
Wow, that's, I 100% agree. Is, you know, it's one thing to be a good biller, and then it's another thing to be a successful business owner. And there's an overlap in terms of the skill set and the mindset, but they are also different things and different skill sets as well. Any other kind of big observations that you've made having worked with so many recruiting business owners over the last, over a year?
Yeah. I mean, there's probably 15 key areas that I think make the difference between a $1 million biller plus and those that are still being stuck on the hamster wheel and being able to reach a certain point. Resilience is also another key principle. And within resilience comes kind of the self-awareness as well, of understanding what it is that you need to acknowledge in your feelings, what's happened within your business, having the flexibility to adapt to any situation, and being able to adjust accordingly. We know that certain markets are hitting tough times at the moment, but that doesn't need to say that you need to continue doing something you've always done for the last 4, 5, 6, 10 years. And being able to be resilient and pivot to market conditions is where a lot of people can still pick up traction without moving too far out of their wheelhouse, but being able to capitalize on the opportunities that's actually in front of them. So there will be hardship, there will be challenges along the way, but being able to hit those kind of challenges head on, even if life and business is unpredictable, I think is one of the key areas as well.
Yeah, no, that makes absolute sense. 100%. So I want to make sure we tap into your knowledge about AI, because from the beginning, Julie, when you first joined us, in fact, I remember back the Edinburgh Live Summit that we did in 2023, last summer, you delivered a session about leveraging AI to improve your recruitment business, and it blew everyone away because, and this was like really early in the sort of like ChatGPT was pretty new at that stage. And since then, you've really kind of led the way for our whole team, as well as our overall community, to really embrace AI and leverage the potential of that across every aspect of your recruitment business. So I guess quick question, and then let's get into some tactics. Like, what was it about this topic that really fired your imagination? And it, like, why are you so passionate about this?
AI is actually not something that's new in the marketplace. It's just the concept of generative AI and the actual revelation of ChatGPT and OpenAI that brought it to the forefront over the last 12, 18 months. AI has actually been around for decades and mostly used through automation, but a lot of people weren't using it on a personal level or even within smaller businesses. So I kind of always was privy to the conversation just due to the conversations that I was having with those highly technical people, and also my own interest in understanding trends, technologies, and just general curiosity whenever it comes to technological advances overall. The main reason that I started to understand it and study it is because I know the profound impact that it's going to have in the recruitment industry overall. And if we can bring that knowledge to the recruitment business owners and recruiters prior to it it being mainstream and being part of everyday business, then it'll have much more of a positive impact than a negative impact if people are having to react to it rather than having the skills and knowledge to be able to proactively integrate it within their recruitment business. So I thought, if we can create something that's easy to learn, that's digestible, that has bite-sized learning, and we actually make it so specific to the recruitment industry that people as business owners or recruiters can see how to use it in their everyday work life and even personal life, that will make a lot more sense as AI is starting to kind of take over and develop in every business, not just the recruiting world.
The world is going to look so different in the next 3 to 5 years. It's hard to even imagine what will be different, but it will be profoundly different. And I feel like, you know, if you wait and just wait and see what happens, then you're going to have like be at the negative effect of this. Whereas if you are embracing it like right now and keeping abreast of those changes as they happen, then you're going to be at the positive effect of the power of AI. And so it's super interesting. So you and Leanne actually decided to develop a whole 12-week program for our clients, which we called Recruit Smarter with AI. Obviously, you can't condense. And so like you've got 12 plus hours of content, dozens of different tools that you like reveal and demonstrate during, you know, that that whole course. We can't possibly kind of summarize 12 hours in the next 10 minutes, but could you give like just, I don't know, two or three keys to help people to get started with this? Because I suspect there's listeners who fall into three categories, right, Julie? There's going to be the folks who, I'd say the majority, are already using AI to some extent, and they're sort of, they're interested in it, they're dabbling with it, but they're not fully utilizing it in their business. They're sort of maybe getting mediocre results with it, but they're definitely interested in it. Then you've got either extreme of that, right? So we're going to have some people who are kind of advanced users of AI who are really deeply interested in it and see the potential and are really embracing it and you know, want to learn even more about that. And then there's going to be the laggards. So the leaders and the laggards, right? The leaders who are charging ahead, and then the laggards who are like, you know, are really only scratching the surface or maybe haven't even looked at it at all. So what would you say for each of those three types of people? So like the laggards, the leaders, and then probably the majority of people who are somewhere in between that, in terms of what would be the next steps for them in terms of embracing this and using it to generate more consistent performance within their business?
The program was built with this in mind, where you have those that are experiencing AI in a variety of different ways and have maybe dabbled with it over a period of time, people that are new to AI, and then people that are further along in the journey. So the program is specifically designed to compound knowledge and understanding over time, so that it utilizes and supports a lot of different technologies, programs, and learning materials, so that regardless of where you are on your learning journey, you'll be able to pick up something from the program in regards to integration. But some of the key shifts that AI is having within the actual recruitment industry is the domination that it's going to have on search engine optimization. And one of the key areas that I was talking about 12, 14 months ago now is you've got the rise of ChatGPT, Google Gemini, and Claude. And really what's happening is those platforms are predominantly now being used as search engines also. As the world starts to develop, it puts recruiters and recruitment business owners in a really great position to be able to get noticed, to be able to have relevant long and short tail keywords, to be able to compete for attention on the search results, rather than the Bings and the Google Chromes being redirected to the likes of a job board or somebody that's paid advertising for a specific keyword, or some of those larger agencies that have bigger budgets on the marketing side. If you start to look at the longer tail keywords that we are used to having, people are now searching in paragraphs and sentences rather than specific keywords. And that's where you have to understand your buyer's persona, your client persona, your candidate persona. What longer tail keywords or sentences are they actually using to find specific recruitment agencies in a specific niche, in a specific location, that is going to support them in their journey and their career? And that's where the shift in AI, in my opinion, is going to make one of the most profound impacts in the recruiting industry, is being able to have visibility, even if you're only a small business owner. If you're able to understand what your candidates and your clients is searching for, you, as it stands today, have a competing chance with every other agency out there, regardless of the budget. Because if you can create content that speaks directly to your audience, the generative AI models is going to be able to index that and take that information and present it forward to your clients and candidates and target audience. So please don't let that pass you by if you take anything from today's conversation.
Yeah, it's so interesting that, you know, these, you know, ChatGPT, Claude, Gemini are going to start being used almost like search engines, right? And so I think that's an incredible opportunity, as you say, for, you know, to kind of level the playing field. And we're kind of the champion of the little guys, right? The small business owners who don't have huge marketing budgets, but could, through through creating the right sort of content, ensure that they are being, you know, ranked and recommended when people are searching for that type of information. And I guess that then leads on to the whole idea of, we know that where these platforms are really powerful, one of the use cases is in terms of generating content. But what we find is when people are either, they maybe have tried creating content using, say, ChatGPT before and had kind of underwhelming results, right? Where they're like, "Ugh, this is useless. It's not. It's just too generic, or it doesn't sound like it's in my voice, or it's not something I'd be comfortable sharing." So it's kind of like they get lackluster results and they kind of give up on it, or they're concerned that, you know, it's the content is going to sound like AI generated content, and it's not going to be a good representative of their brand necessarily. So what advice do you have for people who are trying to leverage AI to create relevant content that is in their voice and that is specific to the needs of their niche market in terms of clients and candidates?
First of all, you need to understand what it is that your audience is actually searching for. Gemini is a great tool to be able to pick up data, market statistics, and analysis, and to really drill down into your target audience and what drives their buying behaviors, so that you can get a cluster of keywords, phrases, sentences that you can start to use in generating content that's going to land with your target audience. Then you can use ChatGPT or Claude to be able to start generating the content. But within both of those platforms, within ChatGPT, you've got an area that's called custom instructions that allows you to input a certain style guide. And what the style guide does, it allows you to create information or input previous content that you have written, and AI will start to learn the types of words that you like, the different sentence structure, the different syntaxes and terminology, and being able to then take the prompt that you give it and then apply the style guide on top of that. So it just doesn't become like a generic response to the ChatGPT, for example, prompt. It actually takes it one step further, where it is giving you the answer to the prompt that you're inputting, but then it overlays your style guide on top of that to make it more personal and unique to you. Then what you can do is take the keywords from Gemini and the information around your keywords and SEO information and incorporate that into your content as well. So not only does it sound like you, but it's actually then supporting the overall business function from an indexing perspective, while also grabbing attention of your target audience.
The style guide is, it's amazing what a big difference that makes, right? If you look at without applying that style guide and then the same prompt, but with that style guide, it's like a completely different output that you get. And so I think that's what people don't realize is, you know, because it's getting to the point now where you can tell that something's written by ChatGPT. There's certain, it has almost its own style of writing and certain words that it tends to favor. So yeah, that's a huge tip. Any other suggestions in terms of creating content that is relevant, original, and unique rather than, you know, too generic?
I think ChatGPT is a great tool to start using for brainstorming activities, you know, to kind of get those creative juices started. But really what I would suggest is creating your brand guidelines and supporting your content creation through data and through insights. Google Gemini has been a game changer to be able to pull industry insights, huge pools of data and information together where you would have needed to hire a data engineer or somebody specific in content creation or marketing to get that information for you and understand your buyer's behavior. And that kind of brings us back full circle to what I was talking about at the early part of my career. If you understand what your buyers, which is your candidates or your clients, is looking for, what they want and what they want to consume, then you're able to make data-driven decisions of the content that you're creating so that you're not creating content for everybody. You're creating content for a specific person, a specific niche, and a specific target audience. And where people make mistakes is they're trying to talk to everybody. And while you're talking to everybody, you're kind of talking to nobody at the same time as well. So do the basics of understanding your target audience, getting your keywords nailed down, creating your style guide, understanding what the biggest challenges are in your niche. Talk to the pain points of your audience, both on the clients and candidate side. And then write content that adds value to those pain points or overcomes a certain challenge that they may be having, and start to build up your authority figure in the niche where you can use ChatGPT and Gemini and Claude to really enhance the timeline that it takes for you to get content out there, but also to help you create new innovative ways to be able to use that content and not maybe just use it in text form, but being able to create video scripts for yourself, to be able to create poll ideas, and looking at different verticals and how you can reposition that content where it's going to grab attention.
Absolutely. I love how, and by the way, if you guys are interested in learning more about this, Julie and Leanne created a free training session that you can check out at recruitmentcoach.com/AI. And one of the demonstrations you guys did that I love is where you're combining the style guide and the buyer persona, which you, by the way, use Gemini to help create the buyer persona in the first place, and then incorporating those both in order to generate very highly relevant and specific and unique content for the pain points, as you say, and the preferences of the exact target audience you're looking to reach, whether that's clients or candidates. And that was such a powerful demonstration. But then also the prompt that you put in to generate not just one article or one LinkedIn post, but a whole content plan, including video scripts, you know, posts, articles, you know, a whole variety of content in, like, enough content basically for 90 days that you're creating in just a few minutes. It was absolutely amazing. So definitely check out recruitmentcoach.com/AI. It's a completely free masterclass and you'll learn a lot. Like, it's, I think it's about, is it 75, 90 minutes, Julie?
Yeah, it's just on 90 minutes, including QA. There's 60 minutes worth of demonstration and then some common questions around integration tools. Really what we've done over the last 18 months is Leanne and I have trialed a lot of different tools and AI tools out there that we know that is going to work for the world of recruitment. And we've binned a lot of tools that I said that they did do certain processes or did do certain functions that a recruiter would do, and we didn't find the beneficial. So we narrowed it down to around 36 different tools overall that you can use. One of my personal favorite demonstrations in the masterclass is the candidate and client conversation that uses transcription software like Fireflies or Otter, being able to then transcribe that information before you even get off the phone, and being able to use that for client and candidate presentations as well. And realistically, that conversation between your client and your candidate can maybe add another 60, 90 minutes on to your daily workload in regards to administration. And we were able to take that from concept to completion in just over 30 seconds in regards to the presentation of the document. So there is so much smarter ways of working that recruiters now need to embrace AI, not to replace their recruiter, but to make recruiters super recruiters. And if you can spend your time and your skills more focused on providing great experience for your clients and your candidate, using the emotional intelligence side of things that can't be replaced by AI just yet, and being able to use AI as a crutch to make you work faster and more smarter with the data-driven insights and information that it can give you, I can only see this being a positive change in our world and the world of recruiting overall.
That's a great recap. And yeah, there's so many of those tools that you guys have identified that are powerful, and then incorporating them into your daily, you know, recruiting processes, things you're already doing to save time, make you super productive, which means you can make more money. And some of them are very simple. And then, as you say, there's a compounding effect by, you know, leveraging AI at multiple different points in your process, that just, it is unbelievable what you can do. So definitely go check out recruitmentcoach.com/AI. Julie, I've been playing around with GPT 4.0, and I don't know if this is going to work on the podcast, but I'm going to try. That's why I saved it to the end, because if it doesn't work, then we'll delete it. But I wanted to try something live here and see if it works. So what can you tell me about Mark Whitby, the recruitment coach?
Mark Whitby is a prominent figure in the recruitment industry, known for his expertise and impactful coaching. Since 2001, he has trained over 10,000 recruiters in 34 countries, helping them significantly improve their performance. His clients range from small firms to some of the best known and fastest growing companies in the recruitment industry. Whitby is the founder of Recruitment Coach, where he offers various programs and resources designed to help recruiters and recruitment business owners achieve remarkable growth. His methods have been proven to double or triple recruiters' billings and significantly increase team sales in a short period. He also hosts the Resilient Recruiter podcast, where he interviews industry leaders, providing listeners with valuable insights into successful recruitment practices before launching his coaching business. For more information about his services and to explore his resources, you can visit the Recruitment Coach website. Please open your app to see this link.
All right, awesome.
Great.
It's cool, isn't it? What can you tell me about Julie McGrath, who also works at Recruitment Coach?
Julie McGrath is a highly experienced coach at Recruitment Coach, where she conducts one-on-one monthly calls with members. She has 15 years of experience in the recruitment industry, having worked in both large-scale operations and running her own solopreneur agency specializing in tech and executive recruitment. Julie is also an active STEM ambassador and panel judge for various socioeconomic and diversity initiatives. She currently manages her own digital skills agency, which supports businesses in embracing new technological processes and upskilling staff for the modern digital workplace. Additionally, she is an NLP practitioner, helping business owners break through mental and physical barriers to achieve greater success. Her expertise extends to addressing business burnout, stress, and helping business owners who are performing well to continue achieving and attracting success into their lives.
That's cool. That's what I'm talking about whenever it comes to the benefits. You know, that's not just a simple Google search of Julie McGrath, Google recruitment coach. It's a really hyper-personalized, specific question that you can see how the ChatGPT and other AI engines are really starting to capitalize on it. I love it.
Absolutely. What's cool is you have this whole conversation, and it does feel a lot like you're actually talking to a real person. And even the voice inflection, it makes it sort of pause or hesitate or like stumble over its words a little bit to make it almost mimic the, you know, talking to a human being, which is it's kind of bizarre, but cool at the same time. Julie, this has been a lot of fun, and let's definitely do it again. So thank you so much for being on the show.
Loved it, Mark. Thanks for the opportunity, and I look forward to reconnecting again soon.
Thanks for watching. If you enjoyed this conversation, check out some of my other episodes. You'll see one or two suggested episodes on the screen now.